Chapter 14. 4 months later, almost to the day, April 21st, he was with John. Albert Bigelow Payne. Stormfield, Christmas Eve, 11 a.m., 1909. Jean is dead. Has anyone ever tried to put upon paper all the little happenings connected with a dear one, happenings of the 20-4 hours preceding the sudden and unexpected death of that dear one? Would a book contain them? Would two books contain them? I think not. They pour into the mind in a flood. They are little things that have been always happening every day, and were always so unimportant and easily forgettable before, but now. Now, how different, how precious they are, now dear, how unforgettable, how pathetic, how sacred, how clothed with dignity. Last night John, all flushed with splendid health, and I the same, from the wholesome effects of my Bermuda holiday, strolled hand in hand from the dinner table, and sat down in the library and chatted, and planned, and discussed, cheerily and happily and how unsuspectingly. Until 9, which is late for us, then went upstairs, John's friendly German dog following. At my door John said, I can't kiss you good night, father. I have a cold, and you could catch it. I bent and kissed her hand. She was moved, I saw it in her eyes, and she impulsively kissed my hand in return. Then with the usual gay leap, well, dear, from both, we parted. At 7:30 this morning I woke, and heard voices outside my door. I said to myself, John is starting on her usual horseback flight to the station for the mail. Then Katie, one, entered, stood quaking and gasping at my bedside a moment, then found her tongue. Miss Jean is dead. Possibly I know now what the soldier feels when a bullet crashes through his heart. In her bathroom there she lay, the fair young creature, stretched upon the floor and covered with a sheet, and looking so placid, so natural, and as if asleep. We knew what had happened. She was an epileptic. She had been seized with a convulsion and heart failure in her bath. The doctor had to come several miles. His efforts, like our previous ones, failed to bring her back to life. It is noon now. How lovable she looks, how sweet and how tranquil. It is a noble face, and full of dignity, and that was a good heart, that lies there so still. In England, 13 years ago, my wife and I were stabbed to the heart with a cablegram which said, Susie was mercifully released today. I had to send a like shot to Clara, in Berlin, this morning. With the peremptory addition, you must not come home. Clara and her husband sailed from here on the 11th of this month. How will Clara bear it? John, from her babyhood, was a worshipper of Clara. 4 days ago I came back from a month's holiday in Bermuda in perfected health, but by some accident the reporters failed to perceive this. Day before yesterday, letters and telegrams began to arrive from friends and strangers which indicated that I was supposed to be dangerously ill. Yesterday John begged me to explain my case through the Associated Press. I said it was not important enough, but she was distressed and said I must think of Clara. Clara would see the report in the German papers, and as she had been nursing her husband day and night for 4 months, too, and was worn out and feeble, the shock might be disastrous. There was reason in that, so I sent a humorous paragraph by telephone to the Associated Press denying the arch that I was dying, and saying would not do such a thing at my time of life. John was a little troubled, and did not like to see me treat the matter so lightly, but I said it was best to treat it so, for there was nothing serious about it. This morning I sent the sorrowful facts of this day's irremediable disaster to the Associated Press. Will both appear in this evening's papers? The one so blithe, the other so tragic? I lost Susie 13 years ago. I lost her mother, her incomparable mother. 5.5 years ago, Clara has gone away to live in Europe, and now I have lost John. How poor I am, who was once so rich. 7 months ago, Mr. Roger died, one of the best friends I ever had, and the nearest perfect, as man and gentleman, I have yet met among my race. Within the last 6 weeks, Gilder has passed away, and laughing old friends of mine. John lies yonder, I sit here, we are strangers under our own roof. We kissed hands goodbye at this door last night, and it was forever, we never suspecting it. She lies there, and I sit here writing, busying myself, to keep my heart from breaking. How dazzlingly the sunshine is flooding the hills around. It is like a mockery. 74 years ago, 24 days ago. 74 years old yesterday. Who can estimate my age today? I have looked upon her again. I wonder I can bear it. She looks just as her mother looked when she lay dead in that Florentine villa so long ago. The sweet placidity of death. It is more beautiful than sleep. I saw her mother buried. I said I would never endure that horror again, that I would never again look into the grave of anyone dear to me. I have kept to that. They will take John from this house tomorrow, and bear her to Elmira, New York, where lie those of us that have been released, but I shall not follow. John was on the dock when the ship came in, only 4 days ago. She was at the door, beaming a welcome, when I reached this house the next evening. We played cards, and she tried to teach me a new game called Arc Twain. We sat chatting cheerily in the library last night, and she wouldn't let me look into the loggia, where she was making Christmas preparations. She said she would finish them in the morning, and then her little French friend would arrive from New York. The surprise would follow, the surprise as he had been working over 4 days. While she was out for a moment, I disloyally stole a look. The loggia floor was clothed with rugs, and furnished with chairs and sofas. And the uncompleted surprise was there, in the form of a Christmas tree that was drenched with silver film in a most wonderful way, and on a table was prodigal profusion of bright things which she was going to hang upon it today. What desecrating hand will ever banish that eloquent unfinished surprise from that place? Not mine, surely. All these little matters have happened in the last 4 days. It'll. Yes, then. But not now. Nothing she said or thought, or did is little now. And all the lavish humor. What has become of it? It is pathos now. Pathos, and the thought of it brings tears. All these little things happened such a few hours ago, and now she lies yonder. Lies yonder, and cares for nothing anymore. Strange, marvelous, incredible. I have had this experience before, but it would still be incredible if I had had it 1,000 times. Miss Jean is dead. That is what Katie said. When I heard the door open behind the bed's head without a preliminary knock, I supposed it was John coming to kiss me good morning, she being the only person who was used to entering without formalities. And so, I have been to John's parlor. Such a turmoil of Christmas presents for servants and friends. They are everywhere. Tables, chairs, sofas, the floor, everything is occupied, and occupied. It is many and many a year since I have seen the like. In that ancient day, Mrs. Clemens and I used to slip softly into the nursery at midnight on Christmas Eve, and look the array of presents over. The children were little then. And now here is John's parlor looking just as that nursery used to look. The presents are not labeled, the hands are forever idle, that would have labeled them today. John's mother always worked herself down with her Christmas preparations. John did the same yesterday and the preceding days, and the fatigue has cost her her life. The fatigue caused the convulsion that attacked her this morning, as he had had no attack for months. John was so full of life and energy that she was constantly in danger of overtaxing her strength. Every morning she was in the saddle by 7:30, and off to the station for her mail. She examined the letters and I distributed them. Some to her, some to Mr. Payne, the others to the stenographer and myself. She dispatched her share, and then mounted her horse again, and went around superintending her farm, and her poultry the rest of the day. Sometimes she played billiards with me after dinner, but she was usually too tired to play, and went early to bed. Yesterday afternoon I told her about some plans I had been devising while absent in Bermuda, to lighten her burdens. We would get a housekeeper. Also we would put a share of the secretary work into Mr. Payne's hands. No, she wasn't willing, as he had been making plans herself. The matter ended in a compromise. I submitted. I always did. She wouldn't audit the bills, and let Payne fill out the checks. She would continue to attend to it herself. Also, she would continue to be housekeeper, and let Katie assist. Also, she would continue to answer the letters of personal friends for me. Such was the compromise. Both of us called it by that name, though I was not able to see where my formidable change had been made. However, John was pleased, and that was sufficient for me. She was proud of being my secretary, and I was never able to persuade her to give up any part of her share in that unlovely work. In the talk last night I said I found everything going so smoothly that, if she were willing I would go back to Bermuda in February, and get blessedly out of the clash and turmoil again for another month. She was urgent that I should do it, and said that, if I would put off the trip until March she would take Katie, and go with me. We struck hands upon that, and said it was settled. I had a mind to write to Bermuda by tomorrow's ship, and secure a furnished house and servants. I meant to write the letter this morning, but it will never be written now. For she lies yonder, and before her is another journey than that. Night is closing down, the rim of the sun barely shows above the skyline of the hills. I have been looking at that face again that was growing dearer and dearer to me every day. I was getting acquainted with John in these last 9 months. As he had been long an exile from home, when she came to us 3/4 of a year ago. As he had been shut up in sanitariums, many miles from us. How eloquent, glad, and grateful she was to cross her father's threshold again. Would I bring her back to life, if I could do it? I would not. If a word would do it, I would beg for strength to withhold the word. And I would have the strength. I am sure of it. In her loss I am almost bankrupt, and my life is a bitterness, but I am content. For as he has been enriched with the most precious of all gifts, that gift which makes all other gifts mean and poor death. I have never wanted any released friend of mine restored to life, since I reached manhood. I felt in this way when Susie passed away, and later my wife, and later Mr. Rogers. When Clara met me at the station in New York, and told me Mr. Rogers had died suddenly that morning, my thought was, oh, favorite of fortune, fortunate all his long and lovely life, fortunate to his latest moment. The reporter said there were tears of sorrow in my eyes. True, but they were for me, not for him. He had suffered no loss. All the fortunes he had ever made before were poverty compared with this one. Why did I build this house, 2 years ago? To shelter this vast emptiness? How foolish I was. But I shall stay in it. The spirits of the dead hallow a house, for me. It was not so with other members of the family. Susie died in the house we built in Hartford. Mrs. Clemens would never enter it again. But it made the house dearer to me. I have entered it once since, when it was tenantless and silent and forlorn, but to me, it was a holy place and beautiful. It seemed to me that the spirits of the dead were all about me, and would speak to me, and welcome me if they could. Livy, and Susie, and George, and Henry Robinson, and Charles Dudley Warner. How good and kind they were, and how lovable their lives. In fancy I could see them all again, I could call the children back, and hear them romp again with George, that peerless black ex-slave and children's idol who came one day a flitting stranger to wash windows, and stayed 18 years. Until he died. Clara and John would never enter again the New York hotel which their mother had frequented in earlier days. They could not bear it. But I shall stay in this house. It is dearer to me tonight than ever it was before. John's spirit will make it beautiful for me always. Her lonely and tragic death, but I will not think of that now. John's mother always devoted 2 or 3 weeks to Christmas shopping, and was always physically exhausted when Christmas Eve came. John was her very own child. She wore herself out present-hunting in New York these latter days. Payne has just found on her desk a long list of names, 50, he thinks, people to whom she sent presents last night. Apparently she forgot no one. And Katie found there a roll of banknotes, for the servants. Her dog has been wandering about the grounds today, comradeless and forlorn. I have seen him from the windows. She got him from Germany. He has tall ears and looks exactly like a wolf. He was educated in Germany, and knows no language but the German. John gave him no orders save in that tongue. And so when the burglar alarm made a fierce clamor at midnight a fortnight ago, the butler, who is French, and knows no German, tried in vain to interest the dog in the supposed burglar. John wrote me, to Bermuda, about the incident. It was the last letter I was ever to receive from her bright head and her competent hand. The dog will not be neglected. There was never a kinder heart than John's. From her childhood up, she always spent the most of her allowance on charities of one kind or another. After she became secretary, and had her income doubled, she spent her money upon these things with a free hand. Mine too, I am glad, and grateful to say. She was a loyal friend to all animals, and she loved them all, birds, beasts, and everything, even snakes and inheritance from me. She knew all the birds. She was high up in that lore. She became a member of various humane societies, when she was still a little girl both here and abroad, and she remained an active member to the last. She founded 2 or 3 societies for the protection of animals, here and in Europe. She was an embarrassing secretary, for she fished my correspondence out of the wastebasket, and answered the letters. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.